Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the Anazal Podcast Network.
Who will win in the match between predator and prey? This is Systematic Ecology. We are the priests of the geeks. We're going to answer this question and a lot more in today's drive-in episode, where we're going through prequel series. Today, we are focusing on the film Prey within the Predator series. And I say we, because it's not just me, Christian Ashton. I'm, of course, joined by the esteemed Jill. How's it going, Jill?
I am great. So happy to join you to talk about this film.
Oh, yes. So I love this film. It is a lot of good fun. I think we're going to have a fun conversation with it. So, Jill, we have just left the drive-in, seeing this for the first time. What's your first reaction and the first thing you want to say about this film?
Holy cow, I love it. I love it. I'm so happy to hear you say that, too. I just felt like it was this feminism line throughout is so cool. Let's talk about that. And let's talk about the special effects. This is such a good movie.
Yeah, I think... that was way better than I thought it would be. Like, I didn't think this would be a terrible movie or anything like that. But it was almost shadow dropped to an extent when it first came out. It was like, oh, man, I barely saw any marketing for this. It was like, that's normally a bad sign of something. But this one blew me away. And I was so very happy because I wanted it to be good. I was like, yeah, I love Predator.
Like, I was pleasantly surprised.
Yes. All right. So for anyone not in the know, this is Prey. This is a prequel to the Predator film franchise, which has movies of various qualities inside itself. The original film, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger, jungle, killing a guy. Lots of words we can't say here because this is a family show. But it's a very, very fun film. It's kind of the ultimate guy film in many respects, of like a bunch of dudes just shooting guns in the middle of the jungle against, you know, an alien. You know, it's fine. Not to say women can't enjoy it or anything like that. But like, when you have films like, who are you going to put? It's like a film that's like a guy film. This is going to be one of those. So this is any less of a guy film, but we get a very nice female perspective here. So Jill, I gave you out a list of potential films that we could have chosen here. And ultimately, you're the one who picked it from that list. So like, why did you pick Prey?
Well, because of Systematic Geekology, I have thrown myself into the alien universe. And I wanted to expand on that knowledge a little bit. The only movie in the Predator series that I have seen was Predator. And that was in the 90s when it came out. So I just sort of wanted to reacquaint myself with this series. And I didn't know anything about this movie. And to be completely honest, so many of the movies you presented were horror films. And I'm scared of horror films.
I forgot that. I should remember that next time.
Quite all right. I was like, this one, I will probably be able to sleep at night. So let's watch
it. You know what? That's fair. I don't want to terrify you. Like, I used to be the same way when I was much younger. I decided, you're done with this. Just watch them. And like, you know what? That was me. Not everyone has to do that. If that's not what you want to do, I'm not going to be the one to force you.
Thank you.
So, Jill, part of this, what we're always kind of do in our drive-ins, like we discuss what we love, what we don't love about the movie. Why don't you go ahead and take the reins there and we'll figure out.
Okay. Yeah. So what I loved so much was the heroine. I just think placing a young woman at the center of the story is so...
Naru.
Yeah, Naru. It is like the antithesis of what we typically see from these types of films. There was nothing about her that was used as like a a sex symbol, or she wasn't fodder in someone else's story. Like, she is the story. And she's not really, she doesn't have all the qualities of a hero. Like, she's quite vulnerable. She messes up. No one believes in her. I think she has this belief in herself and her ability to be an herbal medicine healer and a tracker and this hunter that she knows she is deep inside of who she is, that no one else sees. That ultimately is the thing that helps her conquer and win and beat the predator. But I also love, I'm always going to be me. I love the theme of American colonization throughout a film. And I feel like it was done well. Yeah, it was done really well. The trappers are French. The ultimate evil, obviously. And I feel very much in my Native American, historical era. I've read so many books this year about Native American history and culture. And that's just sort of a theme that has been carried on like since December of 25 for me. And so this fit really nicely right in the things that I'm studying.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Naru is a great protagonist here. She is, in very many respects, the anti, as Hollywood has always had a hard time with female leads, and what to do with them, because guys, it just comes naturally to them because mostly written from a male perspective. So they don't have to justify themselves. When I think they feel like, oh, we do a woman, we have to justify why she's the main character instead of a guy. And so they go with the, I'm not like the other girls, or I'm a woman. And like, there has to be what's said out loud, but it's never, there are issues because she's a woman in the film, in her culture, in the Comanche culture there, of like, hey, stick to your lane, don't do this. But at that same time, it's never like, oh, look at me, this is a tragedy because I'm a woman. No, it's like, no, I'm a person. Being a woman is part of who I am and part of why I'm not able to do what everyone else is initially, but I'm willing to do these things, which shows initiative, which shows that I'm willing to go through pain and suffering because I'm being tracked down by this creature that I have no context for. At best, like, another thing I really love is like the tie-ins to certain parts of Native American mythology. She mentions the Thunderbird very early on. That's a huge thing, cryptozoology as well, whether they're potential creatures or not. I love that. I also really love how the predator in our film like kind of levels up as time goes on, hunting specific creatures, and then like, okay, I took you out easily, so you're not really kind of my thing. I took you out easily. Oh, what if these human people? Let's see what happens with that. And yes, some great fight scenes here. Love what they're doing with all of that. And I gotta say, I love as well this coming back to a different period in time and using that to its full effectiveness. Because you would expect, if we're doing Native Americans, well, we're going to do American expansion, manifest destiny kind of thing. But no, this is pre-America. This is the French are colonizing this part of the world. It'll eventually be part of the Louisiana Purchase way later on. Like, I mean, love is the word I'm going to keep using because I love what they do with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. What is the, is it 1719 year?
1719, yes.
Mm-hmm. It was done so well. There's no white savior, which is pretty rare in Hollywood if we're depicting Native Americans. Mm-hmm. And there's even a moment, when Naru is in the field, she's looking for the predator. She doesn't know what she's looking for yet. And she comes across a field of buffalo that have been skinned, which is just the ultimate disrespect, the ultimate sin in this culture, because they didn't use the meat from the buffalo. They didn't, they being the French trappers. But at this point in the movie, we don't know. So yes. Weird. Kind of trying to decide, is this an act of the predator or is it something else? And she takes a moment to like take a plant from the ground and put it on the buffalo and say a prayer over the buffalo and the injustice that's been done in this field. It's like, this is the coolest thing. And it kind of takes us back to the conversations I've had in the Alien franchise of who's really the monster.
Yeah. Will and Yutani is the answer. outside of Alien Earth, where there are plenty of other corporations that fit that bill. But that's perfect. The setting it where the film is, things are going to be brought up like culturally and everything there. Like, why there are huge differences between these people, these interlopers who come in thinking they can do whatever they want when these people have lived here for however long, they've for thousands of years. And I forgot to say earlier, Actually, before we head that way, is there anything about the film you really don't like at all?
No, I loved the action. That was probably my favorite, and that tends to be the thing that sometimes is too cheesy. No, there isn't. Well, I will say this. I still have a hard time watching women get their butts kicked by men.
I get that. I can't even watch like women MMA fights, like between women hitting each other. It's like, call me, I don't know, whatever you want to call me for that, like anti-feminist or whatever. I can't do that. Like, I don't like seeing women get hurt. I totally get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there were a couple moments, like, first of all, there's some men in her tribe that are really violent with her because they're trying to get her to come back home. That was a little bit hard to watch. And then the French trappers, when they get her, I had in my mind there was going to be some type of sexual violence, and thank goodness there wasn't.
No, that would have been the easy thing to do. And like, definitely something that has happened historically many times over. I mean, it wasn't a pretty conflict on either side, but yeah, choosing, like, putting the threat there, but not actually going through with it, I think shows this as a better film. If this had been made in like the 80s, I think we would have seen more of the violence, and we definitely would have seen some undressing as part of that, to tantalize the audience, as it were.
Yep. Yeah. Was there anything you didn't like about the film?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of that. Like, it's not a flawless movie, but I'm trying to think of, it's been 3 years since I last saw it. I'm not really remembering anything. I don't think there's any pacing issues that I remember, because we get enough, like Predator appears, we get Naru's story, we get action scenes. I mean, there are French people, I guess that's always a negative for me. Some of us have never forgotten the years of Freedom Fries. I'm sure there's something I'm forgetting, but that, I love this film immensely. Like, so I skipped over a question. And that is like how we were introduced to the movie. Do you remember how you were do that? How that happened? Sorry, I'm speaking English language.
Oh, no, it's okay. So it came out on Hulu. Did it actually go to the theaters, or was it straight to streaming?
I want to say there was a limited release.
Okay.
Because I remember something about the Comanche dub being mentioned for something like that, because it was an option on Hulu. And like the whole movie being dubbed in Comanche, as part of the process, I still haven't done yet. That's something I need to do later on, because how often do you get that opportunity?
Right. Yeah. Ever. So my introduction was probably just seeing it on some type of ad through Hulu and thinking like, oh yeah, I'll put that on the list, but never like was important.
I remember I saw a couple months before it was released, like on Reddit, like in, I think the movies separated or something like that. Someone mentioned it was going to be a Prey movie. It's like, that's the first time I've heard of this. And it's like, okay, let's see what goes on. And they're released on Hulu. And I saw people talking about it because, once again, I remember very little marketing for this film. I'm sure there was some, but maybe I was just in the wrong places. And like, okay, you know what? Love Predator. I love going back in time, exploring new options. That's like, was A Killer of Killers, was the animated film. Have you seen that one?
No. Mm-mm. We were just talking about it in the barbershop yesterday.
Okay. I won't say anything then, but outside of the fact that there are different periods in time shown there to great effect. So bringing that to a film really made me love it more, and watched it as soon as I could and fell in love.
Okay. Yeah.
So we kind of danced over it. Like, you want to give like a brief like synopsis of the film? I can help out as needed.
Yeah. The film follows, is it Naru?
That's how I believe it. It's N-A-R-U. If I'm mispronouncing that, it's because, I've only ever, it's been, 3 years since I've seen it, and I'm looking at the word written down.
Mm-hmm. And I don't remember anyone calling her by her name, honestly. So that's why the pronunciation escapes me. But we follow Naru in her Comanche village. She desperately wants to be a hunter. She wants to join the hunters of the village. And she goes out and practices on her own with this axe. And discovers that there is a strange entity in the sky. She doesn't have any language to describe it, but instantly knows there is something bigger and more powerful and more nefarious than the animals that they're hunting, that is out there hunting the animals and then them. And as the villagers are trying to figure out what to do with this predator, she becomes the last one standing. And it's up to her to stop this alien predator from taking over. In the process, we see this other great evil in the land, which is the French. These colonizers and fur trappers that are also wreaking havoc on the land. And there's just an intertwining of who is the predator, who is the prey, who's the monster, who are the heroes.
And it gets to the point where, you know, she's forced to face off against the predator, and gets to the point where she's able to kill it using its own, you know, kind of technology against it, kind of learning from previous experiences, previous battles. She becomes the new war chief of her tribe. And yeah, something I also remember too, she calls the predator at one point a Mupitsi. I believe that's how you pronounce it. That is the, I think it's a giant man-eater owl is the literal translation of that. Okay. And it's part of Comanche mythology. It's kind of like a boogeyman designed to scare children. So it's like, I knew enough mythology because I studied these things, but I didn't know exactly what that was. So what this film forced me to do, which is always a good thing, is to research things. Like, what does that term mean? Like, why would you call it that? It's like, calling it the boogeyman because it, like, you can't really see it. It's killing the people around you. Well, that makes perfect sense to me.
Right. And this predator has, like, really advanced technology.
Yeah.
And they have no context for that. I mean, they're just discovering guns and gunpowder. And this predator has laser beams.
Like, how are you supposed to contextualize that outside of your cultural understanding of how the world works? Yeah.
Right.
So this is part of our drive-in series as well. And the faces behind us has been our theme for the whole year. So Joe, how do you think, like, in light of other Predator movies, anything, or even in the film itself, like, how does that play into our annual theme this year in this film?
Which I love this theme of the faces behind us. I just think it's really cool. It is, for me, I drew the connections in what is it that causes, or what is the catalyst that causes people to, like, step into their true selves, to either become the heroes of their story or become the villains of their story. And for this, it's where her belief meets opportunity, in my opinion, right? She has this deep belief in herself that she is a hunter, that she is gifted with these talents that will allow her to ultimately become the war chief. But she doesn't have a chance to prove that until this, you know, horrible villain comes on the scene. It's just like the match of those two perfect things.
Yeah. I think, so for people who've seen other Predator films, there's a moment in Predator 2 where, I can't remember character names for the life of me. One of the main characters is gifted with a flintlock pistol. And this is the flintlock pistol retroactively that is used in this film, to attack the Predator and everything there. It's like, it's a great way of using previous canon to, like, make a new story here, build up on something like that. And the idea is, okay, let me show you honor by giving you a weapon that helped take down one of our own. So that's our huge thing in the Yalcha predator culture is, like, you know, the hunt, the honor that's involved with that, and, like, showing respect to your enemies. Even if they kill one of your own, well, that means that they're worthy of your respect. So let me show respect to you by giving you this, which wouldn't have happened, now that we know, without, you know, what Naru does in this film and learning one of the French trappers there. I can't remember names and everything. It's been a while. So that's a huge focus here. I will say also there are tie-ins to Killer of Killers that I can't say because I want you to watch that first, because there's going to be revelations that are brought up there to go with certain characters in this film and other films in a Predator franchise. That kind of tie into the faces behind us of how much the Predators kind of respect them. And that's as far as I'll go.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that this funny here, like with the tribal step too, it's the idea of who she is expected to be versus who she becomes and how that kind of affects the tribe as a whole based on how she was taught and how she rejects part of her culture, but still embracing parts of her culture. That's a huge part of it too.
Yeah.
Right. So moving on from there. Kind of brought it up earlier, but going a little more in depth. Like, how does this film factor in to the history of American colonization? I mean, colonization of the Americas.
Right. I mean, it like gives us that ultimate question. Who are the real monsters? What's really happening here? And what is the story? And the story, to me, what's illustrated in this film is these outside forces coming in and just abusing and extracting from the land and from the cultures in a way that is like horror movie level tragedy.
It's that whole thing of, you get them in here and they're not setting up a city. They're not trying to reach out and trade or anything. They are taking things from the environment so they can be brought out elsewhere and not even using the totality of what they're taking, because they only care about this part of it. And the abuse of the environment that comes with that, the abuse of the people who are native to that area as well, because I mean, that's one less thing that they're going to be able to hunt. Or then you keep going down, we're just going to take the pelts. And yeah, those are very valuable things that are used for a good thing, and that being clothing. But how do you obtain such things? Yeah, the ethical consumerism that kind of comes in, and that idea too. At this point in time too, for them to come this far, once again, they're not setting up a city. They're barely setting up forts. And we're just going to say, well, we're here and therefore we own it because we are who we are. And which, I mean, that's every human civilization, including native tribes. Like and you ask, who's the good guy here? Well, not really. Naru's our good guy. And Comanche themselves don't do anything to earn the ire or do anything to disrespect the French trappers here. So they're our ultimate human villains here. So yeah, I mean, it's when you learn your history, it's very complicated. You can't just always say, yeah, sometimes it's easy. Sometimes you say Nazis, bad guys. Wouldn't want to be one of them. Like, it's like your easy out. When it comes to things like this, was settlers came in, like they just wanted to make a living. And yeah, at that cost of other people's lives, but like, that's not what their intent was. And
well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think that the intent is to extract, steal, and profit.
Oh, I mean, for the trappers, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I'm talking about settlers.
Yes. Yeah. People who had actually wanted to live there, find a new life for themselves, unfortunately, at the cost of other people who had already been here previously.
Which so it's
a moral dilemma.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be that way. There is also history. And it has been done where someone goes to a new land for a better opportunity and assimilates with the culture and doesn't conquer it.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of example of that all over the world and in parts of the U.S.
Yeah. And this isn't just an America's thing. This is a human thing. It's all over the place.
It's everywhere.
And I think it doesn't focus too much on it to where it becomes overbearing. It's just enough to go, okay, I see what you're doing. And it's not like shouting in my face, this is wrong and evil. It's like, no, I can see from what you're showing me. Yeah, this is wrong and evil. I don't need to be preached at. I'm being preached to.
Yeah, it's enough to make you think, which is a good thing, which I think is the purpose of art.
Yeah.
Not to preach at us, but to make us think.
So, Joe, one of the questions we are always asking here is, what kind of flavored tea or lemonade would you bring for the drive-in? I did not make this question. I'm a simple man. I drink my Southern sweet tea, and I'll add nothing to it because why mess with perfection? So I'm curious to see what you think.
Do you drink it so sweet that it hurts your teeth?
Yes, and I'm not supposed to anymore with, you know, the pre-diabetes and all. But if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it wrong, right.
I am right behind you. I never go to the South without ordering sweet tea in the last bang. Like real sweet tea? Yes, honey. So sweet.
One of the most disappointing times of my life, I went up to New York City to go to the U.S. Open with my dad. We went to a restaurant. I asked for sweet tea, and they kind of gave me this weird look. And they gave me tea with sugar, I guess, in.
But it's garbage water.
Yeah, it was awful.
But I am going to have, there is a sweet tea flavored vodka that is pretty amazing. I can't think of the brand right now, but we always have it up in Michigan, and we go there for our summers. And so I'm going to have an Arnold Palmer with that sweet tea vodka, because I like a little spiked drink at my movies.
What an interesting combo. Mm-hmm. I never would have thought to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Jill, thank you for your time here. It's time to wrap up. Guys, thank you for everything you do. Please have a chance to, if you get a chance, please do a review on a podcasting platform of your choice. Head to YouTube, Discord, Fourth Wall and More to get more content from us. You can also suggest future episode topic ideas to us. We love doing that. Let's shout out some supporters real quick. Thank you to Aaron Hardy, Daniel Sigmund, Trip Fuller, and James Barrett. You guys are the best. But remember, we're all the chosen people, a geekdom of priests.